Thank you. The Lucky Duck Garage is offering a free lube and grease job to all newlyweds. Luke Lucky says, bring her in and put her up on the rack. Just let him at her with his Malloy wet pump gun of his, and she'll feel like jelly for the next 10,000 rides. That's right, boys. Daryl Duck is ready, too, to grease her up in the rear end for that other half of their fine afternoon in the shop. That's Lucky Duck Esso, 3138 Kelmet, across from the old zoo.
So sweet, so kind, ooh, I can't get Georgie off my insane mind. Ah, Georgie, ooh, pretty Georgie.
What are you doing standing there on the sidewalk? Thought I told you 100 times you see me on the sidewalk, you get in the road. Now get!
Yes, sir!
Georgie. Oh, pretty Georgie, you so sweet, so kind, oh, I can't get Georgie off my crazy mind. La, 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 Georgie, 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 Georgie.
Think you're going to vote, eh? Well, I'm going to tell you something you're never going to vote, and you might as well know it right now. And you better get on back to your house while you got a house to get to, while the roof burned over your head. Now get!
Yes, sir!
Georgie, oh, Georgie, you're so sweet, so kind, oh, I can't get Georgie off my insane mind. La 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 la.
You gentlemen make a mistake there. You ask Mr. Johnson over there. Well, he know me for 19 years. He know I never do nothing like that. You ask that gentleman, he gonna tell him, explain to you. You did, you gonna pay for it. Gentlemen, please, let me explain something to you gentlemen here. You gentlemen gonna do something you gonna be sorry for. Let me talk to somebody here. Let me talk to somebody that got some heart in him. It's a real life. Boy, take that rubber and throw the limb of that tree over there. Gentlemen, please, let me, no, wait a minute, boy. Don't be pushing me, but in there, there's somebody, and there's somebody, you gonna listen to somebody.
Georgia, Georgia, oh, you so sweet, so kind. I can't get Georgia off my crazy mind. Rabbi is rebel bounce, Scooby.
Well, now, what I want to do is have a mutual brain-picking session. And I'm going to start the ball rolling by saying why I, as a philosopher, am interested in many things that you are all probably interested in professionally. Basically, what we're going to talk about, I suppose, is the problem of control, as exemplified in the ancient Latin question, quis custodiet custodes ipsos? Who guards the guards? Now, we know that we're living in an age when there's been an enormous proliferation of techniques for subjecting every kind of natural process outside the human skin, and now increasingly inside the human skin, to some form of rational control. And as we succeed in doing this, it also becomes apparent that we're failing, that the process becomes of such a high degree of complexity that we begin to feel that we're standing in our own way, that everybody complains. The state of affairs in the modern world, in the technological world, is so complicated that nobody can understand it. Nobody really knows what to do. That, for example, you want to run a small business, and you find you run into such enormous legal hassles that you need so many secretaries to do the paperwork, that you can hardly do the business, that you're trying to run a hospital, but that you have to spend so much time making records and writing things down on paper that you don't have much time to practice medicine, that you're trying to run a university, and the requirements, the recording, the endless red tape of the registrar's office and the administration building is such that the actual
they make
work...
make me nap, and ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
Bottom, it rumbles more than the rumba. If you think that the two-step got 'em, just take a look at this number. It's got that certain swing that makes you wanna sing. Don't go left, but be polite. Move to the right, doing the reactionary. Close your eyes to where you're bound, and you'll be found doing the reactionary. All the best dictators do it. Millionaires keep stepping to it. The 400 love to sing it. Ford and Morgan swing it. Hand up high and shake your head. You'll soon see red doing the reactionary.
Don't go left, but be polite.
Doing the reactionary.
Close your eyes to where you're bound, and you'll be found
doing the reactionary.
All the best dictators do it. Millionaires keep stepping to it. The 400 love to sing it.
Ford and Morgan swing it. Hand up high
and shake your head. You'll soon see red.
Doing the
reactionary.
So get in it, begin it. It's smart, oh so very, to do
the reactionary.
And that was two from Pins and Needles, the usual opening theme, plus Doin' the Reactionary. So, you're tuned to Free Radio, as you might know, or perhaps you don't. 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. My name is Robert Norris, and this show is called Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. It happens every Thursday night and every Sunday morning, and it's about Santa Cruz local stuff. Which means, particularly if you're local, that you're invited to call in with news updates, particularly if they concern civil rights for poor people, because that's, or civil wrongs against poor people, because that's what I'm up to. At least that's what I'm up to talking about. And in aid of that, I play a lot of stuff from the streets, interviews at protests, go on at length my thoughts on these subjects, and invite yours. So accept the invitation if you wish. The phone number here is 427-3772. 427-3772. You can also drive 469-3119. 469-3119. That's the alternate number here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. And yes, we are still looking for a transmitter site. Yes, we are still seeking a new studio site as well, because it's a time of some disruption. Foreclosures, people moving on, folks who had previously been helpful no longer able to be helpful because they no longer own the property that they used to own, and or they're no longer renting and can sub-rent to us the way they used to. So we need help. And if you want to help out, you may find us at the farmer's market on Wednesday, or you may decide to help us even sooner. If you see a place, or if you know of a friend who has a place, or if you want to ask around and find a friend who has a place with a big tree on their lot or a second story, anywhere in the Santa Cruz area, even somewhat beyond the city limits, give a call. Give me a call at 423-HUFF. That's my number, 423-HUFF. That's in numbers. It's 423-4833 is the number. It's also, of course, the HUFF line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is kind of at the center of what I talk about. These kinds of issues are issues we are concerned with restoring, or perhaps creating for the first time, basic homeless civil rights in Santa Cruz, and getting the rest of the community to assist us in doing that. One of the big problems in Santa Cruz is people are simply not aware of what's going on. And so the traditional repression machine, police department, parks and rec, city staff, public works, all goes about their gentrification business unhindered. And then you have groups that use for their own political gain, or because of genuine misguided political conviction, or misconvictions, or false convictions, if you will, demonize homeless people as criminals, health hazards, safety menaces, all of which is kind of a familiar, sour old tune from days past used against all kinds of other groups that has nothing to do with the majority of folks in those groups, and simply involves an excuse for persecuting, harassing, demonizing, and expelling those groups. In some cases, eliminating those groups. Don't want to see that happening here any more than it already is. In fact, I'd prefer to see it happening less. And I hope you would, too. Call in, 427-3772 is the number. Or you can email me at rnorse3, at hotmail.com. Also, if you want to be on the HUFF email list, I'm putting out a few more emails these days than I used to, at least I did this morning, about a protest that did get rained out today and might get rained out tomorrow. I'm not sure what the weather's looking like tomorrow morning. But we are trying to stop the city's latest gambit to essentially remove the very right to park in a legal place near the homeless, what I call the homeless lack of services center, what they call the homeless services center out on Coral Street. All those streets are being, as listeners know, have been listening, for the first time ever in Santa Cruz, a 24-hour ban, other than those with permits, is being put on parking on any of those streets. Is that because there's a, I don't know, an oil spill, a great danger, some kind of gas leak, bubonic plague in the soil. No. I don't actually have the specific reasons that the Public Works Department has decided to do this. I have not read the particular complaints or seen the petitions, if there any such exist, because Marlon Granlin, who's the parking permit program director, has not seen fit to send those to me. He has the power to do that. I've asked him to do it repeatedly. He's declining. Instead, I'm being sent through this slow process, which is completely unnecessary, that Bren Lehr, the city administrator and clerk, oversees, she should know better too, in which they can play around for 10 days and then even more time. Whereas I'm quite aware of the fact that if you walk into the Public Works office, they have a file which they can choose to show you or they can choose not to, having to do with all the public comment they've gotten, the whole basis for their decision to make any particular area in the city or their move to make any particular area in the city a permit parking zone or change the parking restrictions, instead of getting double talk from the city, which is nothing new, but the community should know about it. This is a way of frustrating those who wish to have real input into public process and letting the greater community who might want to have input into this no access to what's going on. And there are other issues as well, and I'm going to begin with those. But any time you have an issue of your own that concerns civil rights for poor people, homeless people, renters, workers, please call in, let me know. We can talk about it here and maybe get some other people to join us in the conversation. So, some weeks ago, I think it is now, late April. April 30th, actually. I was talking to some folks on the street who were expelled from the boardwalk beach area, and I don't have the entire conversation, but I have enough of it, I think, to make it interesting to listen to, so I'm going to play that now. I'll try to fill in some of the blanks. Part of it was recorded over, in spite of my wonderful new audio device, and we'll see what we will see.
And the lady there, she was just like, I don't appreciate being recorded in this. And
I said, I don't appreciate being asked to leave.
Yeah, exactly. I'm here from Massachusetts, like, visiting. Like, this being a tourist town, there's not necessarily making it seem like a very tourist-friendly place. Just because I look the way I look, you know, doesn't mean that you shouldn't judge me for who I am. You shouldn't judge a book by its cover, you know?
To which she replied.
I didn't necessarily say it to her. I was just more in the sense, like, just like, why are you kicking us out? Why are you kicking us out? And she didn't necessarily, like, tell us anything until we actually left the building. And she's like, your friends aren't allowed to have dogs here. First of all, service animal. You're not allowed to smell like weed because...
Do we know what her name was?
And we were asked to leave, and then she told us if we were to return on the property that night, that we would be leaving the night in handcuffs. And so my friends here, they were told that they could talk to customer service about the whole entire ordeal. And when they went there, about like six cruisers rolled up. My friend, he's treated wrong. He's got like cuts all up in his arm and stuff like that. And it's like...
I better ask him what went
all
along.
Over dogs. Yeah, you can ask him how it went, you know. It's pretty ridiculous. Angel, you can tell him about the whole entire night about what happened over there, like how ridiculous it was. How, like, they were told, you guys were told to go to customer service, and you guys ended up getting arrested for trespassing, even though you guys were allowed to talk to customer service.
We've been talking with
Christopher Pham.
Thank you. Thank you, Pham. And what's your name?
Angel.
And Angel, you say that you encountered an unexpected response from customer service.
Yes.
What happened?
Well, what happened is that they kicked me off at the boardwalk, but then I went to go back because I have proof, even though legally I do not have to show proof.
And of your service animals?
Of my service animals, yes. And eight of them, you know, they came at me and surrounded me. And then
they being security guards, police?
Security guards, the boardwalk security.
Yeah, what happened then?
And then they tackled me, and then, you know, of course I freaked out, man. I mean, they came at me for no reason. And this was me going to the management to, file a complaint. And they arrested me when the sheriff came by, and I had to spend 5 days in jail, and I just got out yesterday.
Are you charged with anything or not?
Yes. I am charged with a misdemeanor assault.
And who do they claim you assaulted?
One of the security guards.
And... any witnesses to any of this?
No, a lot. Like, everybody was like recording it, and then people are like, "This is gonna go on YouTube."
Did it go on YouTube?
I do not know. I just got out of jail yesterday, so.
And we're talking with
Angel.
And Angel, you intend to stay around, or are you going to skip town?
Well, I'm gonna rest a little bit, then skip town.
Fair enough. Well, may you fly well.
Thank you.
And the name of your dogs are?
Alice and Malyumpkin.
And who is this person standing to your left?
My wife.
What's your name?
Mouse.
Did you, Mouse, see any of this? Or?
I saw everything. I'm actually charged with battery as well.
Unlawful touching? Were you touching those security guards?
I was trying to pull them off them, yeah.
And describe what happened as far as blow by blow, if you can.
I don't really remember too much, but...
Were you drinking at the time?
I was completely...
High on meth, perhaps?
Totally.
Stoned on grass?
I wish.
Eating too much chocolate?
No.
So you attempted to pull off the security guards. What happened to you? He's not a happy camper, I can see that.
No, he's not. I just started to... scream when they started to get on him, and then I started to try to pull him off, and it was, I don't really remember too much of it, because
were you yourself arrested?
Yeah.
How long were you held in jail?
It was just a book and release, but I was there for quite a few hours. 12, I think.
This was your welcome to Santa Cruz?
Pretty much, yeah. It was like our second week, maybe. No, not even
second
that.
Day.
Second day, actually. So...
Well, whoa. Anything else you want to add?
Santa Cruz police are assholes.
Now, was it the police or the security guards you primarily were concerned with?
Well, actually, the security guards are the assholes. The police here are actually not that bad, but the security guards suck balls.
And we've been talking with?
Mouse.
Thanks, Mouse. Any report?
They pretty much got it.
Okay.
All traveling together, so.
So we're talking with...
James.
James, you've been traveling with the folks I just spoke with. Were you there when this incident occurred?
Yes, I was.
At the boardwalk?
Yeah, I was.
Anything you observed that, you know, perhaps hasn't been said?
Well, I walked in, sat down for about 5 minutes, and then was told to leave.
Now, you were seated where?
I was seated probably 5 feet away from them.
What were you, where were you, at a table, on the ground?
I was at a bar, and I was taking a picture.
Name of the bar?
At the Neptune's Bar.
And what did they tell you, who told you to leave?
The security guards. They just come up and said, you can't be here, and they asked for all of our IDs, and gave no reason. And I asked repeatedly, I was like, why do you need my ID, and why am I being told to leave here? I haven't done anything wrong.
Neptune is a place on the boardwalk, or it's
a public place.
Is it on the boardwalk side, or is it on the other side of the street?
Oh, it's on the boardwalk. It is on the boardwalk, and we were told that we had to leave that night.
Private property, son.
Private property. Yeah, it's public. It's supposed to be public.
Well, certainly it's in public. So what did you do then?
Well, we ended up leaving that night, and we were gone probably about 15 minutes when Mouse and Angel went to go talk to
customer service or customer arrest service.
Customer arrest service. That's pretty good. Yeah, customer arrest. Well, they got arrested. We were probably on the beach for 5 minutes, and I looked to the right, and I was like, oh, there's a cop car. We should probably go check on our friends. They're getting arrested.
How many police came to arrest them?
Yeah, 6 to 8.
Security guards or police?
Like police officers.
Well, they're a pretty dangerous group. And those two dogs are, oh gosh, they're at least, what, a foot and a half long and a foot high. I mean, that's...
Well, for a 5 foot tall girl and a...
They don't really get big.
5 foot five male is skinnier than a string bean. Four cops on one guy.
You can't be too sure. Shoot him first and talk later.
Four cops on one guy. I mean, it's tackle on the ground. It's just ridiculous. It's brutality. It is. And it's just because we're dirty. It's just because we do not look like the norm here.
You don't look very dirty. You look a little ragged, perhaps. A scruffy, perhaps.
Well, to them I look dirty.
But not particularly. Your face is clean. I haven't examined your fingernails. Well, they could be cleaner.
They could be cleaner.
Yes. And we've been talking with?
James Evans.
Anything else, James?
I don't know if I'd want to stay here, because the only people that actually are friendly are the homeless people. They're more willing to feed another brother half of what they've worked for all in the entire day, when you can sit on the sidewalk and be like, can you just spare some food? I don't want your money. I just need some food because I'm hungry. And everybody will turn you down. But you can sit next to a homeless man on the side of the street and he'll give you his food without you even asking, just because you're hungry.
Now, is this true here in Santa Cruz? You notice it elsewhere?
I've noticed it in a few places.
What other places?
I've noticed it up in Washington and up in Humboldt area. They're really friendly up there. But it's like the farther south you get from Humboldt and up towards Washington and Oregon, it gets worse and worse. It just seems like they're putting us in a category like an animal.
Well, if you ain't got the do re mi, son.
If you were to look at those mannequins right there, we see headless statues.
You're pointing at the gap.
They see us as dirty. They don't look at our faces and see a person.
No,
they just see the dirty
clothes. Upscale clothing, for God's sake.
They just see the dirty clothes. If I could afford nice clothes like that, I'd probably wear them.
Clothes look okay to me. Yeah. And we've been talking with
James Evans.
And you are?
Benjamin McCammon.
Benjamin, are you also a traveling man?
Yes, sir, I am. I've been traveling about 3 years now. 2 years for eight. I've been hitchhiking on and off.
And were you with this gang, or did you just happen to run into him here?
No, I just happened to run into him, and it happens a lot on the road. So,
how long in Santa Cruz?
Probably about 3 months.
What do you think?
I love it.
Any hassles?
Yeah, a lot of hassles.
Yeah. Most recent one that they're speaking about is...
First of all, they got a $300 ticket for smoking on this fucking street.
What you're doing again, you dirty criminal, you.
But it's stupid. But it's retarded.
It's sharing your crime.
But it's retarded because, like, why would they do that? Like, you know, like, America's supposed to be free. But, okay, here in Santa Cruz, they put us in these outline boxes where we have to sit. We have to be in these boxes to ask people for money or even to eat.
The performance pens, as we call them?
Yeah. Pins, basically. I mean, it's all bullshit in any other eyes. But the way I see it, I see that we're 100 steps ahead of everybody else. Because if a rich Wall Street stockbroker fell on his fucking knees, he'd probably shoot himself in the head before he lived on the streets. He wouldn't know the first thing about living on the streets. And that's what really gets me. We're the smartest people out here. We really are. We're not lazy. We walk so much more than everybody else. I set on my feet, dude, 9 hours a day on end. You know, I drink alcohol. I'm a shrilly kid. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm a professional drunk, and I'm willing to admit it.
You don't seem terribly drunk at the moment.
No, I'm kind of drunk, a little bit.
A little bit, maybe, but not much. I can't smell any drinkies. Yeah.
Well, I'm from Alabama. I was raised in moonshine, so it takes a lot.
I see. So you have tolerance for it.
A high tolerance.
And what about this person here? What's your name, madam?
Mayo.
And Mayo, is that with or without? No! Sorry.
It's the spreadable kind.
Yes. And you're seated...
Because she's white.
Oh, is that what it is? So, how long have you been associated with this man behind you?
I've been associated with Ben behind me for like 4 days.
And what do you make of him?
He's a crazy son of a bitch, but we look just the same.
And where are you from?
Oakland, California.
And what brings you here?
Love.
For a particular person, or you just love the Pacific Avenue area?
Sharing love with other people.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're a giver as well as a taker.
Oh, I'll take anything they can give me, but I'd rather give it to them.
Have you found love here?
Yes.
How recently?
Every day.
Last moment of love was?
Right now.
Oh, is he sweet? We've been talking with
Mayo.
You don't say anything else?
Today, I got harassed by the cops. Now I have a fat bruise on my arm.
Tell me about that.
Well,
you're showing me your left arm,
yeah.
Upper arm there. There's a bruise on your upper arm there.
So, I got drugged yesterday by somebody on the streets, put GHB and Benadryl in a pill, gave it to me, and I'm really allergic to Benadryl. And so today, I was trying to make some money for some food for me and my dog, and I passed out. And the cops came up and thought I was just some drunk and started grabbing me as hard as they could to try to wake me up and pull me. And they used so much force to cause bruising, and then I had to go to the hospital because of it.
Wow. And where was this?
Right on Pacific.
And you know, in front of what business?
In front of Coldstone.
And what time of day?
Around noon.
Any witnesses?
Yes.
Any witnesses you know the names of?
Yes, Sage.
And is Sage a long-timer here?
He's somebody that travels with me.
So, you'll be posting your account on YouTube, perhaps?
Most likely.
Except nobody videoed it, I suppose.
Probably not.
What did they say at the hospital?
That I was drugged with GHB and Benadryl.
Did they document the fact that you had a bruise on your arm? Would they help you with that? Anything? Any kind of assistance?
No.
Well, serves you right.
Probably does. I'm a dirty hippie.
Yeah, you are one of those dirty hippies. We've been talking with the dirty hippie whose name is?
Mayo.
Thank you, Mayo. Thanks, everybody. I'll take this and we'll put it on free radio and I'll go get something to eat. So,
and that was on April 30th. Those folks I encountered downtown, I think it was after a show a week ago. That's about a week ago. And there were a bunch of them with a couple of dogs, travelers. You find a lot of folks traveling from coastal town to coastal town. And it's looking increasingly violent for people. I did get several calls from Dead On David, who may get back to me. He's welcome to call in again if he'd like, as anyone else. Call. The phone number here is 427-3772, and I say give us a ring-a-ling.
How ugly can you make this world? Let's just try to see. You build your office buildings to the sky, cut off the hills and the trees. How ugly can you make this world? Those in charge say not for me. They'll still have their special places. No, you're not invited for tea. Ugly can you make this world? Drop those bombs for blood. Blood for oil and coal for your stocks. Getting richer for sure. How ugly can you make this world? Who cares what poor people think? Stick your robot cameras on the streets to catch 'em. Make New Orleans stink. How ugly can you make this world? Humankind is your little joke. You fill your airways with your warped ideas. Think you can offer me a coke? How ugly can you make this world? How ugly can you make this world? How ugly can you make this world? Let's try to see. Far as the eye can see. How ugly can you make this world? No more parks or forests. No clean oceans, air, and streams. Hey, you don't need stars to see. Gonna be a graveyard anyway. In the end, we're just hurrying it along. Anyway, we're almost there. Would you like to sing along? How ugly can you make this world? How ugly can you make this world? It was beautiful and clean at one time. That was long ago.
And that was How Ugly Can You Make This World, an album by Mike Leslie called Bad Robot. However, on the line, we have a perennial caller, dead on David Silva. How you doing, David?
I don't know how dead on I am. I'm sort of like perpetually resurrected more than dead.
No, I'm not saying you're dead. I'm saying you're dead on, which means...
Yeah, okay, yeah. Well, I think there's something I've spotted today, Assembly Bill 718, Assemblyman Chu. Or somebody woman chew, or somebody person chew, it will make it illegal for any police officer or peace officer anywhere in any city in California to ticket someone for sleeping in their car.
I think I read something about that. There is the right to rest law, which has been put into deep freeze for a year.
Yeah, right to rest went into deep freeze, but this is a new one, I guess, from the sound of it.
Well, that sounds like at least a step forward.
Yeah, more so call your assemblyman, everybody. You know,
I think the more upscale homeless will be able to, if you can afford a car, then maybe they'll let you sleep, huh?
Yeah. It seems that that's what it is to actually criminalize people that are shelters, is their car. It's the purpose of this bill from what I read about it, to knock it off, to have all these local police departments knock it off and stop it.
Yeah, well, in Santa Cruz, as you know, David, it's not only it is illegal to sleep in your car by a local ordinance, and it's going to become illegal to park your car anywhere near the supposed homeless services center next week they'll start posting signs unless Marlon Granlin, who's the parking czar, decides to allow public comment and forwards the issue to the Transportation and Public Works Commission.
Well, we need to have some public comment on this because it's bad enough that they criminalize the homeless without cars, but then to like further criminalize those with cars that have some shelter, some means of sheltering themselves, it's just disgusting, So I was ready to demonstrate today, but I guess we got kind of rained out. we'll demonstrate at the shelter house again soon.
Well, actually, we're planning to go to the library tomorrow at 9:30, so people are invited to join us. There'll be some hot coffee, maybe some munchables of some kind. That's in front of the Santa Cruz Downtown Public Library.
Okay,
9:30 in the morning, yeah.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, David.
Okay, keep up the good work, Uncle Robert. You know, your show is important. This homeless civil rights is the civil rights action of today everywhere.
It's certainly
Bye-bye.
One of them, yeah. Thank you. So, yeah, just to kind of remind folks who haven't heard or perhaps haven't had the latest update, there's not really a hell of a lot of updates except the protest today, which I put out on Santa Cruz Indie Media, was rained out. It's been rescheduled for tomorrow, hoping that it won't be rained out. Not quite sure what the weather is going to be tomorrow. It's supposed to be sunny today, and... it wasn't, but that is as may be. The issue, for those who don't know, is a new, peculiar, unique to this most recent action by the Parking Department of Public Works that they want to eliminate all vehicles from three streets near the Homeless Lack of Services Center, or the Homeless Services Center, as they call themselves, regardless of who they are, unless you have a permit, which won't really inconvenience the merchants because they have their parking spaces, so their privileged customers can go park in their parking areas. But everyone else, including homeless folks who want to come, let's say, and eat the meal twice a day, stand in line for a shower, fill out some paperwork and try to get some kind of housing several years down the road, involve themselves in any of the other much touted but not terribly substantial programs, although for some people they work, and for some people get lucky there, you won't be able to do it unless you walk in several blocks. So you have to sell your car perhaps for a bicycle. I think that you can probably still park your bicycle in the locked yard, which behind the locked gates of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, provided you present your proper ID and you get past the, well, for us, it was an armed police officer on Tuesday, Officer Azua, and also a secondary guard, one of their security guards. And then there was another woman at a sort of a booth who was monitoring people, and it was like some kind of high security airport situation or court situation. And that spells police state to me, folks. And it spells police state against the most particularly vulnerable group of people who don't have a lot of choices in dealing with this stuff. If they want to get a meal or into one of the Paige Smith, Paul Lee, or Reveille programs, or the, I guess the Homeless Persons Health Project may have a separate entrance. I'm not sure what's going on with that. I should find that out. If anybody has information on this, let me know. I suspect that it may not. You may have to go in through these gates, past all these monitors, past the police officer, and so forth. And I don't know if the police officer, whose name is Bill Azua, who I have reported on in the past as being videoed selecting homeless people all the time for ticketing, but also going after African-American people on Pacific Avenue. Though it has to be said that his record of tickets does not necessarily reflect any kind of racial discrimination, but his behavior on a couple of videos taken by the Colbys shows him ignoring white people smoking and then grilling and harassing African-Americans for smoking. So I asked him about that. He had nothing to say except he didn't like his nasty comments being made about his daughter and then broadcast on YouTube by a couple of the people who were angry at being harassed by him. And what Azua was doing on Tuesday when we arrived, we came, a few of us, two or three of us, and set up a table, a small table, a very small table. It wasn't even a card table. It was kind of like one-third of a card table. And we had gotten some coffee to distribute and some cookies. And we had some petitions we wanted people to consider signing opposing this permit parking zone. And also, we were interested in getting people's accounts of what's going on inside the homeless, the lack of services center. How do they like being behind bars? Do they feel it's more comfortable for them? Do they feel more secure? Do they feel protected from whatever they're supposed to be being protected from, or some other way? Well, we weren't able to do a lot of that because the first thing that happened was Officer Azua strode across the street from the squad cars he was standing next to and informed us that we could not set up adjacent to the sidewalk outside the homeless lack of services center because that was their property and there was no loitering there. And I told him, well, they better tell us that themselves because we're here specifically because we're concerned with the destruction of homeless parking. And it's actually a precedent being set for everybody in the city where there'll be no parking, period, unless you have a permit, which, of course, sends money to the coffers of the Public Works Department in the city and may please some people who happen to have the luxury of parking spaces or don't use cars, and I can see how that can be a positive thing for sure, as a person who has a very noxious car that spews out a lot of fumes, which I'm soon to get rid of, I think, but has a lot of good bumper stickers on it, I got to say that. In any case, we wondered if the Homeless Lack of Services Center management was going to attempt to tell us that not only were they eliminating parking spaces, but they're also going to eliminate the First Amendment in front of their Homeless Lack of Services Center buildings, even though we weren't inside. Well, Officer Azua came back with a woman from the Homeless Lack of Services Center. I don't think it was I'm sure it wasn't Janan Thomas, the director of the Homeless Lack of Services Center. It was a lower level employee, but who she adopted an air of authority and told us that we could not come into the area, into the center itself, and disrupt everything. And I said, we aren't petitioning. We're trying to disrupt anything. We're trying to stop the city from disrupting the right of homeless people to park and simply by asking homeless people if they want to sign a petition to that effect. She had no patience with this and said, no, we won't allow that. And I said, okay, well, then you'll have no problem with us being out here because we're not disrupting anything. She said, no, you're on our property. You can't be out here either. And so we then said, okay, we'll move onto the sidewalk. But it was a very narrow sidewalk, I would say 4 to 6 feet wide. And this is right next to the bus stop, and it's also next to the entrance to the homeless lack of services center, where people were coming and going with their bikes and so forth. So we set ourselves back a bit, set up the table, and in spite of all this, for the next hour and a half, well, Officer Azua didn't stop there. He began to tell people who were gathering around us that they were blocking the sidewalk, and they were loitering, and they couldn't do that. So a number of people who would have signed our petition were essentially intimidated from doing so. They told us this directly later by Officer Azua. But we did get 29 signatures, although it was done in such a makeshift manner that we didn't get all the information we needed. And usually when you do a petition, you need signatures. You want the person to print their name, maybe leave other information. But we did get a clear indication that people are definitely... A significant majority of the people we talked to were opposed to this parking permit ban. This homeless vehicle ban is really what it is. And so we vowed to return, planned to come back today and repeat or continue the process of getting a petition somewhat in a more methodical manner with better video coverage so that if, again, we got abuse from either Officer Azua, and I do consider harassing people who are trying to petition and harassing people who want to sign petitions a form of abuse of a significant kind. It also seems politically motivated because one of the things I was told by the parking department czar, Marlon Granlin, in the emails he sent me was that the people involved in doing this were the Santa Cruz Police Department and nearby businesses. So the police department has played a significant role in, again, crippling a homeless population as, I would have to assume, a form of discouraging them from using the homeless services center, making it more difficult for them to do that. It's sort of like the police department in Scotts Valley. This is what ex-supervisor Neil Coonerty was accusing them of, and it's been a brouhaha on the Sentinel, dumping people. I don't know if they do that regularly. I don't know if Coonerty is accurate in this case, you know, as I've talked about in the past. But it's the same kind of thing, this notion the police department has. They've complained that they spend a lot of time dealing with complaints about homeless people. In fact, Steve Clark, the deputy chief, made a big deal of this 2 years ago to create further amplify the hysteria created by Take Back Santa Cruz and the clean team, as they call themselves, who are shaking needles at the city council, bottles full of hypodermic needles, in order to sort of suggest that the homeless population is creating a drug epidemic that somehow makes them a particularly important target. When in fact, if you look at all the crime stats, as we began to methodically do, we in HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, you find the major crimes being charged against homeless people are sleeping outside, being in a park after dark, and smoking. It takes up 70 or 75% of all the citations. And less than 1% has anything to do with any kind of violence. So I don't think you're going to find that kind of breakdown among other crimes, and that's an important stat we don't have or we didn't get, but that can be gotten, although it's become increasingly more difficult to get these stats from the police department. When we get them, they're incomplete. When we get them, we have to send them back. And then when we get their codes that they present that they don't explain, it can be a difficult process of sort of parsing what they send out. But the whole idea that there's a crime wave created by the homeless and therefore a huge public cost is in fact created to some extent by the police department itself, which moved initially to help create some of these laws that criminalize homeless people. They're always, always again as a hyperbole, but I've heard the police, particular police officers say in the past, well, go talk to the city council, we're just enforcing the law. But if you go back and look at the origins of the law, they came from recommendations by the police department. Now, it doesn't mean those particular officers recommended it, but it means their department, with its ideology, give us the bearcat even if we ignore what the public wants, even if it costs a whole lot of money for some taxpayer somewhere, even if it's a terror weapon that actually encourages more violence than it subdues, even if it is designed ultimately as part of a national effort anticipating large-scale resistance to police state tactics, as some have suggested here and in Baltimore and across the country, who are concerned about the militarization of the police. In any case, we're going to be continuing this protest against permit parking, which, as I said, has also apparently been signed on to this ban on permit parking, not our protest against the ban, but the ban itself, by the Homeless Lack of Services Center. A director or board of directors, I don't know what Janin Thomas's view is, the executive director. I'm hoping to get more information. I've talked to an intermediary, hoping that she will come clean on the issue, although I'm very skeptical. Almost every director, with the exception of Doug Loisel, that I've ever talked to in the last 15 years, when they'll talk to me at all, won't give you a straight answer around some basic questions, such as the one we pursued as to just the disposition of such elementary things as sleeping tickets, where homeless people who have no place to stay are being given tickets for between $100 and $200 for sleeping at night when they have no place to go. Even the Red Church is now turning them away, according to reports, not just turning them away, they were kind of turning a blind eye to them if they're sleeping on the property, but there's no problem. Now, apparently, that process has ended, and Joel Miller is clearing people away, and we're going to be hearing some audio about that tonight. But we'll be back, those of us who are pursuing the issue of the stopping this 24-hour homeless vehicle ban in front of the Santa Cruz Library tomorrow morning. That's Friday, the 8th of May at 9:30. And we invite you to come on down. We tried to make an appointment with Micah Posner, city council member, to talk about it. I've asked, sent emails to a number of council members about it, as well as to the entire city council. No response whatsoever. Posner had no response as well. When I finally got it, he called me back this afternoon. He was too busy to get together tomorrow, even though that's his regular time. Though he did acknowledge that the reason he was too busy was he'd made separate appointments with other individuals. And I told him, you know, if you're going to have a meeting with a bunch of people, if you're going to have a public meeting time, then make open it up to the public so people can come and they'll share the time. And he was too busy to talk about that. But he did offer to get back to us on Monday. And I think what I'm going to do during this show is give him a call and ask what his perspective is on this issue, what he intends to do to oppose this permit parking, 24-hour permit parking ban. There's already permit parking required in those areas on the three streets near the Homeless Service Center already. So it's not like it's there isn't already restrictions. There is. However, what is now being proposed is that there'll be no parking whatsoever without a permit. As I said, this happens nowhere else in Santa Cruz. There's all kinds of permit parking restrictions, but this is the first time, according to Marlon Granlin himself, the parking czar. So let's see if we can get a word from him. We can sometimes do.
Hello, this is Micah Posner. You've reached my
and
cell phone.
Instead, we've reached your cell phone.
I'll get back to you. Thanks.
So at the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording,
so we'll try to leave him a message and see what he says. Maybe he'll call us back.
To leave a callback number, press 5.
So let's give it a try. Hi, Micah. This is Robert again, Robert Norris, and I'm calling you on Free Radio. If you get this message between 6 and 8, I'd like you to tell me what you're doing to stop the 24-hour parking ban on the three streets, Coral, Fern, and Limekiln, that is being, well, will go into effect, as I understand it, from Marlon Garland next Wednesday. Or maybe it's Tuesday, even. In any case, give me a call back, 423-4833. That's off air. But if you can, before 8, give me a call on air. I think the public would like to know. And that's at 427-3772. Thanks. So let's, I'll take a deep breath or two and a musical break, and I'll be right back.
was a junkie, I lived on the street. I had no money and nothing to eat. A kindly policeman came by one fine day and changed my perspective on living that way. In jail, don't bother paying my bail. Give me a blanket and three squares a day. Life is much better in jail. I had no direction when I was a kid. I loved to be free, didn't care what I did. My civil rights were just weighing me down, but now getting busted has turned me around. In jail, don't bother paying my bail. Give me a blanket and three squares a day. Life is much better in jail. My civil liberties, I have to say, just clouded my judgment and got in my way. Pull up your bootstraps and reach for the stars. Life is much better by far behind bars. In jail, don't bother paying my bail. Give me a blanket and three squares a day. Life is much better in jail. I was a tree sitter up in the grove. They told me to leave, but I just wouldn't move. I had no respect for the cops till I saw they could take me to jail for no reason at all. To jail, to jail. Don't bother paying my bail. Give me a blanket and three squares a day. Life is much better in jail. I walked the picket line there at my job with Susie and Sally and Barney and Bob. Management said they respected our right, but just for good measure, we'd all spend the night in jail, in jail. Don't bother paying my bail. Give me a blanket and three squares a day. Life is much better in jail. I love a nip of the hair of the dog. The sun doesn't shine without my tot of grog. I love a beer sitting next to my plate, but now I believe I am getting it straight. In jail, don't bother paying my bail. Give me a blanket and three squares a day. Life is much better in jail.
And as she was saying, life is much better in jail. At least that's the name of the song. That's from Carol Denny's album, A Toast to the Union, Carol Denny. So I think what I'm going to do now is play a little more from Pacific Avenue. This is, again, the same day as the boardwalk bust you heard from earlier. There's a lot of music here, so it's going to be about kind of a lot of musical interluding, but that's okay. Nothing wrong with that. Let's hear.
Listening to the music of
Austin James Hicks. The song is called Melody Line.
And I found a land where a man can stand and watch the sun slide into the sea. where a tree grows so high that he touches the sky. And the wind sings a song just for me. My granddaddy told me once upon a time that a song ain't a song without a melody line. Well, maybe sometime I'll find mine. They wrap me up, I'm as good as gone. I've lost my cup, half full or not, but that's okay. I like being lost. Yeah, I find comfort in the chaos. And every moment is another dead end. I don't know just where I'm heading, but that's okay, 'cause neither do you. Papa told me I'll see you later. God is taking my respirator. Just get me high and I'll make you. Remember one day, son, you'll be in my shoes. When I know that I can't know, I just hope I'm comfortable. Though my mind can't find a home, I bet at the end of this, well, I'll know where to go. And I found a land where a man can stand to watch the sun sliding through the sea, where a tree grows so high that it touches the sky, and the wind sings a song just for me. And the wind sings a song just for me. And the wind sings a song just for me. And the wind sings a song just for me.
All right.
They like it. And we've been listening to the music of
Austin James Hicks.
Thanks,
Austin. All
right. And that was, well, it's been described already. Call-in number here is 427-3772. Call in if you'd like, if you have any thoughts about anything you've heard, if you yourself witnessed or had any problems on the streets regarding misconduct or perhaps particularly good conduct by police officers, security guards, hosts. Are you happy with the increased presence and visibility of police and security personnel and hosts and fences and gates and locked areas and curfews at night, because that's what we've had certainly increasing in the last 3 or 4 years. Not necessarily because of an increasing crime rate, mind you, but because of a mentality that suggests this is a good thing to do. In the studio with me is Doc Mike, who has his own show. I've lost track of when it is. I think it's Mondays and Tuesdays. Is that right, Mike?
Yeah, that's correct. Monday, Tuesday, correct.
And you are going to be... You got something coming up next Monday and Tuesday we should know about? Or?
Well, my Monday show is called The Awakening of the South. It's about spiritual awakening. And the Tuesday one is called Dr. Mike's Health and Welfare, a wellness show. It's about how to take charge of your health.
How is your health, Doc Mike?
I struggle a bit with my health because I've had diabetes for a good number of years, 20-something years. And I have, you know, can't avoid some of the side effects for that. But, you know, the interesting thing about that is a diabetic patient is worth $750,000 to the medical profession, to the nephrologist who does their thing, and to the amputations of the limbs, to the eye doctor who does his thing, and to the cardiac thing who does his thing.
So you're a valuable commodity, in other words.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the reason why they haven't really been looking for a real cure for diabetes. They tell you it's incurable. But I'm beginning to find out recently that it is actually curable.
So you're a man who's outside often. You've been living in your vehicle. You've been at the Homeless Lack of Services Center recovery program after getting having a mild stroke or heart attack.
Yeah, some problems with my heart, yeah.
And so what's your estimation of the quality of homeless services here medically and in terms of recovery services?
I think they're pretty adequate. Actually, they have a clinic over there by the homeless services, and it's not really run by doctors. It's run by medical assistants. But you know, if they have any serious problem, they refer it to outside doctor. I think they do a pretty good job. Most of them are pretty nice, and the Resuscitation Care Center is serving a good purpose. It's for people who come out of hospital and who need some care for a certain period of time.
Earlier in the show, when you weren't here in the studio, Doc Mike, I was describing a little loud there on the feedback. I don't know why my mic is so high and yours is so low. I think that's a little better. I was describing how the entire homeless lack of services center complex, as I call it, you might take a different sense as to what goes on there, is surrounded by fencing. Is that also the case with the Homeless Persons Health Project?
Well, you have to go through the main gate, you know, so you do have to book yourself in type of thing. You know, you have a certain...
So there is a... It's covered by the gate.
Yeah.
And have you've been going there pretty regularly to the Homeless Lack of Service Center. You're in the Pauley Loft now, yeah?
At the moment, yes.
And you pretty much go in and out of that gate every day?
I do.
Is there usually a number of security guards and or police that are regularly standing by the gate?
There's a little kind of a little cubby office at the gate. There's usually somebody in there, and they usually, if they know you, they might wave you on, but they usually punch in your number that's on your identification card, and occasionally there's nobody there. You just walk in, but I've seen people being stopped there if they don't have a card, if they don't check in.
And do they usually have additional security and police standing there?
There's often police around the outside of across the road with they park their police car. There's often police around there, not all the time, but there are people there. I don't know if they're looking for people in particular or...
They're there for your safety, Michael. Don't chuckle at me, sir. I want to hear that lawless attitude. So how long have you been in Santa Cruz now?
I've been here about a year and a half, approximately.
When you first arrived, did you use the Homeless Services Center at all?
No, not for several months, not for 6 months or something.
So when you used it, though, initially there was no card required or getting past a locked
gate. Correct. There's no gate.
Do you feel
no
more secure now that there's a gate? Do you sleep better at night now?
Well, the only thing I can say is... I saw a guy tonight being ejected for 30 days from there. I mean, he was outside on a bicycle complaining, basically, and I don't know what his offense was, but it does give them more control to eject some people who are who cause them trouble. You know, they have control over it. They can say, you can't come in here for 30 days, you can't eat here, you can't use the facilities here.
But my question is, do you feel more secure? Are you glad that they have that control?
Well, you know, basically, I don't feel more secure, but on the other hand, it's not such a big problem, really, to tell you the honest truth. I haven't seen any real big problems.
So living behind bars, provided you don't get locked in, is okay with you.
Yeah, I haven't seen any
gutless scumbag. What can I say? Right. That's your honest opinion. And I was asking for it. And
it seems to run pretty smoothly in most cases.
It runs pretty smoothly, sort of like Pelican Bay or San Quentin.
But you know,
they run pretty smoothly too.
I'll say two things. There are really nice people in there. staying there, you know, but there's also other people who...
There's a different element.
Well, it's not... It's, they're human beings, but the thing is, in some, sometimes... It's
they need medicating.
Sometimes it's
they're
like...
They're overdosing.
No, no. Sometimes it's like walking through a minefield. You never know when the mine will go off because some of these people are emotionally unstable.
Unlike being,
angry.
Say, unlike, say, being a homeless person walking through or a black guy walking through a white neighborhood when you feel perfectly comfortable and secure.
Well, I
particularly a wealthy white neighborhood. The only thing you have to worry about are guys in squad cars with flashing lights, perhaps.
I don't know what they'd say about that. I wandered once in Fort Lauderdale into a black neighborhood, and some people came up to me, and they were really worried about me, said, you know, you shouldn't be in this neighborhood. It's really dangerous. So I kind of got out. I drove
out. Adopted their paranoia and left.
I did. Followed their instructions.
I'm actually glad you... You mentioned that to me because I actually I've been following a thing called the Real News, which is
I've heard of that.
Yeah, it's a Baltimore alternative media.
Yeah,
which has kind of a different perspective on things. I'm going to play a little bit of it, not much. People can actually get it, just browse for the Real News. This is a town hall discussion around the Baltimore events involving police murder. The government's decision to crack down on protesters with a curfew, and so forth. Let me see if I can cue this sucker up and play a little bit of it. We'll hear what we will hear. Don't go away.
Welcome to another special live edition of the Real News Town Hall. I'm your host, Sharena Christmas, at the Real News Media Center right here in downtown Baltimore. For those of you joining us for the first time, welcome. Real News is a viewer-supported news network. Baltimore is in a state of emergency, and before you think I'm referring to the events following the death of Freddie Gray, what I know from living and working in Baltimore, the city has been in dire need of change. The folks being affected by failed programs, blight, police brutality, a poor and unequal education system, and exposure to rampant crime the most are city's youth. The government, activists, and educators can make as many programs as they like, but are they really helping the youth? Do they know what the youth need, and who's listening to their cry for help? More than ever, while the nation's attention focuses on the city in a way we haven't seen since the 68 riots, it's time to mobilize our efforts to answer those cries. We've invited youth from all around the city to tell their stories, speak out against the issues, and also talk about what's really affecting them. The most important thing is developing long-term solutions and resources for change. But before I introduce you to our panel, I want to contextualize what happened last week. Why was so much national attention focused on the rioting that took place instead of the days of peaceful protest by our youth prior to that fateful Monday? The Real News producer, Sharnice Fox Richardson, took a look at how the mainstream media's portrayal of the youth went far towards perpetuating a very dangerous stereotype.
Baltimore, Maryland, home of the Orioles and the Ravens, where barrels of crabs and Nanny Bowl are part of a perfect weekend. Like most urban cities, Baltimore is divided by north, south, east, and west neighborhoods. If you travel through the perfectly manicured jewels of the Inner Harbor and Camden Yards, crossing over to North and Pennsylvania Avenue, you realize that Baltimore is a tale of two cities. Around North and Penn is where you will find young men who look like Freddie Gray, a barren, resource-stricken neighborhood full of stereotypes. When Freddie Gray died on April 19th, activists citywide were organizing and protesting the circumstances that surrounded his death. 7 days later, what began as preventative measures by the police to avoid clashes with gang members turned into a riot, spurred on by high school students full of discontent. Suddenly, West Baltimore became breaking news.
Breaking news.
And let's get right to the breaking news. In Baltimore, just a little while ago, police announced at least 7 officers have been hurt in attacks by violent and rock-throwing, brick-throwing protesters.
When individuals get crowbars and start prying open doors to loot, they're not protesting. They're not making a statement. They're stealing.
Too many people have spent generations building up this city.
This is the mayor of Baltimore.
For it to be destroyed by thugs.
People wonder where the parents are. Where's your role models in the area? Where's the sense of values and character?
They may have the same potential, but I'm not sure they have the same opportunities. There's no question that they have a steep hill and a tough road to hoe.
Dr. King said that riots are the language of the unheard. And rather than focus on the circumstances that brought on the riots or the peaceful protests and community organizing that happened just prior to the images of the city in flames, major media outlets focused on the negative. The youth of Baltimore hope that someone is finally listening. For the Real News Network, I'm Sharnice Fox Richardson.
Although I have been working with youth for many years with my nonprofit Muse 360 Arts, I've learned that it's important to provide a platform for youth's voices to be heard.
It's just really interesting. I liked it. I enjoyed it, but that's just me.
Right. I'm gonna show you nothing, Lee. So after this evening happened, the curfew happened. And what do you guys think about the curfew? How many people in the community supported the curfew? Just to be honest, like how many do you know people that supported it? What about parents?
It's a large crowd.
Do you have any parents in the audience that actually supported the curfew?
No hands are going up. This is a video.
Okay.
Show.
So what was wrong with the curfew? Adam, can you share with us your opinion about the curfew? Do you think that it really solved the problem, or was it just, you know, something to cover up a whole nother issue?
Well, I mean, generally speaking, I mean, my problem with like news coverage, mainstream media coverage, is that people always want to moralize on black folk when we destroy property in the face of injustice, but no one moralizes on the police officers who kill black people. And so we're having all this conversation about is it right or wrong that we're destroying CVS. CVS is not of and from the black community. So so if a black person sees a CVS and is angry about, you know, the killing of Freddie Gray, then, you know, that's going to happen. So what we should do is fix the racism and white supremacy that's embedded in the systemic oppression of black folk, not moralizing on 17, 16, and 15-year-olds who bomb a CVS.
Right.
And so, and if we talk about the curfew, I mean, with that, I mean, when you start using words like state of emergency, National Guard, you know, curfew, these are all words of social control. And the thing is, when you look at it from a systemic level, this is always how this country has dealt with black people. You know, because no one calls you, when you look at the different protests that happened during the LGBT movement, no one calls those things riots. They call them fighting for justice. They call them fighting for freedom. But when black people do it, all of a sudden we're rioters, and people use the words like thug in the media. But it's like, if your son or daughter was killed by the police, I'm sure you would riot. And if I was killed by the police, I would think my family would riot. Right. So the thing is, we should be looking at it from a systemic standpoint and understand the ways in which we can transform systems. And my thing is, I mean, like Megan said, I didn't enjoy it. I don't think violence is a great strategy. I mean, I don't endorse it as a strategy. But if people are upset, I'm not going to tell black people you can't be violent. You should probably be mad. And if you're not mad, then something's wrong. And so my thing is, we should be using this as an opportunity to pull in young black people to figure out how we can get them involved in how to actually make systemic change and not let them get high off their adrenaline and come down, you know, after a week of, you know, of chaos. And so I think it's, you know, but to answer your question about the curfew, I just think generally that was an afterthought. You know, we need to get social control over the Negroes. That's what they were doing. Mm. And so, that's how the mayor's approached this. She does, because, you know, Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake is disconnected from the people. She doesn't know,
right.
She doesn't know who the people of Baltimore are. And so when you talk about curfew, like my thing is, Stephanie Rawlings Blake should have been in the street when it first happened. She should have been in Penn North at that night. She should have been talking to the young people. But the thing is, when you have elected officials that aren't connected to the community, you start thinking like, well, let's institute a curfew. Like, we should have seen her. We should have seen her on the streets. But, you know, I just think it was a form of social control. It was Negro control is what it was. And it wasn't a way to deal with the systemic problems. And she's going to keep talking about the Department of Justice and all these other things to obscure and obfuscate the larger issue, which is systemic transformation. You know, I mean, one way we can do that is putting her out of office next year.
Yeah.
Say that one more time.
Sorry.
So what I'm asking is, from the frustration that was exhibited from young people, where do you think that came from?
I think it comes from a number of different places. Like, I think if you're specifically talking about the young people who were involved in what happened on Monday, I think, first of all, most of the young people who are out there, like, don't really have many resources to begin with, especially if they live in that neighborhood. Like, there aren't very many rec centers in that area. There aren't really many that many resources for people to be able to kind of go outside and deal with some of the frustrations that they have. Mm-hmm. And then they also have a relationship to the officers who patrol that general area anyway. They lock up their brothers, their cousins, their fathers.
And you were out there, so
yeah.
What did you see when you were out there? What kind of expressions? What was the energy like?
I mean, I think it was, in some ways, it's going to sound bad, but to me it was kind of freeing to see young people kind of be able to react that way, because I know that that's how they feel on a regular basis. So for them it was kind of like liberating to be able to, you know, cuss the police out or throw stuff at them, like, because they felt like they were able to protect themselves finally,
right,
from something that they feel like is always kind of terrorizing them. So, yeah, it was just really interesting. I liked it. I enjoyed it, but that's just me.
And that's from the Real News in Baltimore. It's from a segment called The Fire This Time, a town hall discussion. It's an hour and a half long, so I can't play all of it. And, of course, I don't have to, because it's there for you to hear. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. In the studio with me is Doc Mike. I'm Robert Norris. If you want to call in, the call-in number is 427-3772.
And we got some music on the street here. That looks like a... Hey! It's a Ricardo and a whole bunch of familiar street performers.
The lemon starts and the lights go down, and there's not another living soul around. You pull me up till the sun comes up.
And this group of ne'er-do-wells is playing outside of the bracketed area, in front of a sidewalk cafe, at night. And what's going on here?
Baby, I hope you're gonna stay away. And it'll be the end of me. When the loving starts and the lights go down, and there's not another living soul around, you pull me up till the sun comes up, and you say that you love me.
Sorry, I'm here with Brenda Adams.
I don't want to talk about it.
Who refuses to talk, but he's going to show me a picture being worth a thousand words. It looks like poo-poo on the street.
On Pacific Avenue.
Somebody took a jump on Pacific Avenue. What a dump is all I can say.
3 p.m.
I'm like, I had to go to the kiosk. I had to get information. Brenda's working on the downtown bathroom project. But I also have Dreamcatcher to my left here. Dreamcatcher, you're a man who's gotten many citations for sleeping, and I'm still trying to get you some.
Before we leave the poo-poo question, that's actually become an issue for two activists. Brent Adams, who's been putting out some colorful flyers about a project he proposes, which is to clean up the Posner porta-potty, which is the only 24-hour bathroom downtown, unless you happen to own a business and are sort of staying in there overnight. Which is illegal, by the way. You're not allowed to sleep in your business. That's a resident activity. But who knows how many people do that. It's the only bathroom downtown. It's at the corner of Front and Laurel Streets. And according to Brent's account, and if you look online on his Facebook page, he's actually got a group that's talking about this. He's documented the fact that it's cleaned, I think, only every several days, whereas other bathrooms are cleaned every several hours. I was a big opponent of the idea of putting in a porta potty rather than, let's say, it's a $15,000 a year porta potty too, by the way. Instead of putting in opening up the bathrooms that already exist in the park or in the garages, that would seem to me be much more sensible and also fairer, more egalitarian, and more durable. You know, I don't know if it would be more less expensive. I'm not sure about that. I suspect it might well be, but I don't know how I know that the amount of money that Ed Fry, the activist who, out of his own pocket or with the help of Paul Lee, financed a porta potty in the Peace Camp 2010 protests 5 years ago, where he set up the only downtown porta potty in front of the courthouse at night and then took it away during the day because a number of us for the first week and then many more people, myself not included, after that first week, occupied the area during the night in order to dramatize the lack of, not just the lack of sleeping facilities, but the fact that homeless people who tried to sleep somewhere, anywhere, were subject to arrest and were getting ticketed and harassed, and that then the Homeless Lack of Services Center was doing nothing about it in terms of any kind of public statements, and they weren't helping in terms of publicizing how little space they had. They were essentially colluding with the police mythology that there's no real problem here except a lot of crime because people choose to sleep outside to flaunt the law. There's nothing, kind of lower and more despicable. Well, there probably are some things lower and more despicable, but it certainly seems low and despicable to me to criminalize, to throw more metaphorical shit at people who are already struggling with all kinds of disabilities and just trying to get a night's sleep at night under circumstances that most people would find it very hard to sleep outside in vulnerable situations without adequate clothing, without adequate toilet facilities. It's to further criminalize people by demonizing them, which is, I think, what is done when the police call these things crimes, is a pretty shitty situation. That's what we find in Santa Cruz. But, it's also nothing new, so you can't really jump up and down too much about it because it's been happening. Anyway, Brent Adams' perspective was he's put out a picture of a porta potty he shows a picture of the one at Front and Laurel Streets. This is Santa Cruz's only 24-hour bathroom. Other public bathrooms are cleaned every 2 hours. This one is cleaned only 3 days per week. City workers refuse to clean it, not their unit. It's often so dirty it is unusable. Local residents are coming to rescue as a cleaning team. We need your help as a crew to help buy supplies. And he signs it, Downtown Bathroom Task Force, Santa Cruz Sanctuary Camp Village. And my reaction to this, well, I have to ask you let me ask you first, Mike, what your reaction to this is.
The thoughts are on my mind is that there are people sleeping around town, and they get up pretty early. They get up like about 6 in the morning because I have seen them walking around. And they need to use a bathroom, and they have to go somewhere. And if there's only one bathroom here at this side of town, that's really not good enough. And I've even seen tourists at 10 o'clock at night. I've met them looking for a bathroom. They haven't been able to find one at that time.
Well, my question, Mike, is what about this project of cleaning up? Hang on a second here. Again, I'm experiencing feedback here. I'll turn it down so I get less feedback. Well, people can still hear me. Brent Adams is asking us to contribute money and go in and help clean up this porta potty that the city refuses to clean up, even though the city put it in and finances it. I mean, it cleans it up every 3 days, according to Brent Adams. I don't know how accurate that is, but I guess give him the benefit of the doubt. What do you think of this plan of calling for other people to come and clean it up?
I don't think that's a good idea because we pay our taxes to the city, and it's their responsibility to provide for the citizens, basically. And I don't see why we should put more pressure on the city to do a proper job and not to try to get people to volunteer to do that kind of work.
Yeah, I mean, I got to admit, it struck me similar, or even more so. I mean, my thought was this is akin to, you know, trying to show that we're all good homeless people. We're going to go clean up the mess we made, you know. When in fact, Gary Johnson, who's Ground Zero, Gary, the guy who went to jail for 6 months and then got sentenced for another 2 years for lying down on a bench in front of the county building, the courts area, with a sign that said "Sleep is not a crime." And of course, you know the reason he was jailed because he was lying. Obviously, sleep is a crime. They wouldn't have put him in jail if it weren't. We don't want liars like that, both A, lying on a bench, and B, lying to the public. How can that be? Therefore, obviously, it was a very just thing to do. But what Johnson writes under this story, which you can find on Santa Cruz Indie Media, he writes, "My experience," he suggested moving the porta potty to a more discreet location. He said that Peace Camp 2010, where he was a prime person there, along with Kerbucker Chris, Ed Fry, and a number of other folks, for 3 months of the protest, it was usable for all 3 months. One time it got abused at the courthouse when we woke up to a huge line of pre-marathon joggers that the marathon organizers had abandoned to the toiletless pre-dawn hours. Drunk wannabe jocks and the unscoring attendees of Warrior basketball games and those leaving bars after hours are the problem. They lack any self-interest. They're willing to trash anything. We at Peace Camp 2010 were subjected to plenty of their kind of lawless, unprosecuted behavior, including urinating, defecating, and fighting on the streets near the bars while the protest was at City Hall. The simple solution, initially the protest started at the county building, and then was forcibly moved to City Hall. Well, it was forcibly moved away from the county building, and it reassembled at City Hall. The simple solution is moving the porta potty away from the cash-laden drunks that the Warriors and the bars are dumping on downtown. Somewhere discreet, those in need will know where it is. I don't know if the city can put in a discreet porta potty. As I said, what they need are some open bathrooms. And that was something Micah Posner refused to do because he said he didn't want to offend the staff. Apparently he's a little worried about, you know, having to do too dirty a job, I guess. It's okay to clean regular bathrooms every 2 hours, but let's give the homeless something they clean every 3 days, and then start ranting and raving when they're shitting in the bushes. I mean, this is a combination of cruelty and hypocrisy that really makes quite a swampy, soupy mix in Santa Cruz. Mm-hmm. And you turn to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, and you're welcome to call in at 427-3772. Or to join our protest tomorrow morning. We're going to be outside the main library at 9:30. We're going to be keeping an eye on how the security guards treat people going in and out of the library. And we're also going to be signing people up, perhaps this is the main point, to stop the ban on homeless parking that is being proposed, not just proposed, that will go into effect next week unless it's stopped or at least delayed by going to the Public Works Commission, which wouldn't be delaying it too much, since I think they have a meeting shortly thereafter. But so far I've heard nothing from Marlon Granlin on this issue other than confusing, contradictory statements and failure to provide public records, which I continue to demand so far without success. Let's go back to the streets for a moment, and here's something that's going on there. By the way, if you want to find out what's happening with the Highway 6, those are the people who had the courage to block the freeway, chain themselves in order to express solidarity with All Lives Matter, particularly black lives are being treated like nothing, and of course that includes homeless lives too, as well as these massive tuition hikes that put people into debt for their lives at the university in order to allow others at the top to continue raking in the profits and maintaining the obscene privileges they have. They pled out. That is to say, they took a deal with the district attorney, and they'll be coming back for sentencing again. They made some lengthy statements about it. I don't know if I'd have done the same thing. I generally don't plead out. I didn't plead out the last time I was accused of more serious charges, but there are still four people who are twisting slowly in the wind on those charges. The Santa Cruz 11 is now the Santa Cruz 4. But the Highway 6, if you want to read more about them, you can go to Santa Cruz Indy Media, and there's some interesting coverage that went on from hearings that happened this morning. But the bottom line is they're going to have to come back in a month and get sentenced. They're going to have to deal with restitution demands, not for any damages they caused, but for the police overtime that was involved. The first time I ever heard where you're going to have to pay twice for the police, first with your tax money, and then the second time if you are arrested and sentenced to some kind of, are forced to take a plea, because I think that they were afraid that first of all, the costs of a significant defense and the risk of getting a higher sentence would impact all their lives. I guess there was also the feeling in other cities when there have been massive blockages of the freeway, even in Santa Cruz in the past, there have been no such charges leveled against people, no such demands for restitution. This is an example of the police state in action. This is an example of the state that wants to punish peaceful protest and deter it. They are ramping up to stop peaceful protest as the vice grows tighter. And it's a really, it's a difficult situation, one that I think requires continued protest, continued courage, and solidarity with each of us, not just everybody in their own secret little private little group in their private little home, but a broader solidarity. And I was glad to receive an email from Sin Baris activist Courtney Hansen today, commending us for the protest we planned today and was rained out, but we'll be doing tomorrow, that I mentioned to you, against the homeless vehicle ban that they're planning. It seems a small thing, you know, in terms of ordinary people. Homeless people are a small percentage of the city. But it means that it shows the fundamental callousness and basic obliviousness to human needs that really underlies a lot of the city, and is done with a kind of casualness that really belies belief for me. 9:30 tomorrow, I'll see you outside the main public library if you want to show up there. Let's hear a little more from the streets, a little music to calm us all down.
Signed up for the small claims court response.
I'm ready, willing, and able. I got a bad toothache right now. So
I heard about those.
Yeah, just came on, but I'm feeling okay.
Dream catcher.
I'm very straight.
I don't smell no booze on your breath, hombre.
I've never had a drink in my life.
Oh, I don't see no meth tracks around here.
No, I've been bathing in vinegar to get rid of the skin fungus that we all caught down there at the Occupy.
I see.
Bathing in white vinegar gets rid of it. And I'm feeling I feel like watering the garden every morning with my grandpa. That's how I feel lately. That's a good thing.
Any reports on the street that you wish to pass on?
Yes, since I've been gone for about 72 days, I came back and things were beautiful. There was no riffraff around. People can play unmolested. And, there's a perfect Pacific profile that I think is finally being perfected, in a sense.
Can you name all the singers in this group?
Yes, I can.
Name them for me.
That's Jack. That's Zach. That's Jay, right? They all start with Jay. And that's Cooper. I could say Juper, but if not. And that's Ricardo. And I'm security.
And you are Dream Catcher.
I am the Dream Catcher, and I am feeling very good. And I hope the homeless population is very small right now, which is good, but we're getting some new people in because it's the beginning of the summer. And I'll be coming and going because I have a project up in Northern California that I've been working on. And I'll be coming down here, and I'll be straight.
Thank you, Dream Catcher.
Can't ask for any more than that.
All right. Speaking with.
No.
Take care.
And that was April 30th on the street a week ago after this the same show. Let's see where we're at here. I don't know if I can really cue this up properly. I might be able to. I've had some problem with it in the past. Let's see how we do here. A little hard to work this. even though this is reputed to be an advanced device. It was recommended to me by a supposedly reliable individual, but it's hard to say. Yeah, I can't quite do it. Instead, I think what I'm going to do is try something down the road a piece. Let's see where we are with this.
Well, I'm down here on River Street, I think it is, and it's a Saturday evening, getting a little chilly. Darkness is almost about to fall, and I'm talking with...
Oh, I'm Corey. No,
nothing about confusion?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry, I thought you were...
I was confused.
Okay. And the local police just passed by.
That's my...
So I've talked to an anonymous individual, who I shall not identify, who has mentioned to me that Officer Azua has been busy. Take care, guys.
Harassing.
Who claims that in the last month he's gotten two citations, at least one.
Two in one day.
Two in one day, he says, for camping. At least one of them is for camping, as well as some anti-homeless remarks from Officer Azua, African-American guy, but don't have the details. They were reluctant to speak. So, and it was Officer Azua who we actually encountered trying to interfere with our rights to petition out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center and intimidating homeless clients on Tuesday. It's interesting. I mean, Azua is quite a congenial fellow under some circumstances, as are a lot of these officers. I mean, part of it, that's part of the job description. You're supposed to be able to present a pleasant facade, a sociable manner, underneath the iron fist. And this is not unusual in police departments and military. It's repugnant, it's vicious, and it's lethal, as a mode of social control under the most necessary circumstances. I think we got to remember that a lot of the origins of policing in the United States come from slave catchers. That's one of the main functions of the police, was to catch slaves. And indeed, today you'll hear police telling you, as they harass poor and homeless people, driving them from place to place, ticketing them, citing them, often physically abusing them. And I've heard reports of that more recently, that they're just following the law. And it's not that they're lying. The laws are created to criminalize classes of people, that more wealthy classes of people are afraid of. And I think that's something that now we have to get together and change, and I don't think we're going to change it without significant struggle, whether it's moral or physical or both. As Frederick Douglass put it, it's still going to be quite a struggle. Some of us are not going to be able to live to see it, particularly people in darker skin in certain ghetto areas. I would imagine that's one of the first groups to get it. Let's go to the Red Church now and hear the explanation of Joel Miller as to why he is cracking down there. As I mentioned before, in recent weeks, he's decided not to allow people even the 1 hour a week they are officially allowed to be on the grass and to socialize there in this huge open green area in the middle of town. Now even that hour will be gone. And additionally, I learned recently that, and you're going to hear this on the audio, that he's had people arrested for sleeping around the church. Let's hear more of that. Well, I'm talking with
Father Joel, Calvary Church.
And so we are, of course, at a Monday, right before the 5th of May, we're on the 4th of May, end of the meal. Folks are piling up chairs and putting away tables. It's been kind of a light meal.
It was a meal. It was the same as always, really.
I mean, it was a light turnout.
Light turnout, yeah.
Beginning of the month.
Beginning of
They're
the month.
They're all doing meth and getting all drunk outside.
No.
But not on the lawn, I noticed.
indeed. So you want to know why. In a nutshell, we can handle ordered chaos more easily than chaos, total chaos. And so we were just trying to think of ways to make this beneficial for the guests that come and also for a beneficial experience for the volunteers.
Nice, nice packaging. Now, the question I have for you is, we should tell the audience what's going on. For the last, how long has this meal been going? Since you've been here, right? How long?
I'd say almost since I've been here, maybe 8 years.
An eight-year Monday night meal has been a regular feature of the Calvary Episcopal Ministry of Joel Miller here. And there was a change about half a year ago or a year ago that specifically involved, I guess, not allowing people to be on the lawn, sit on the lawn between 5 and 6. The meal usually went on from 6 to 7, but from 5 to 6 people could get coffee and go outside or stay and listen to a service that has some interesting speakers on occasion, I have to say. The Christian stuff aside, if you will. But the Christian action is what impresses me. I enjoy, you know, those who are interested in justice or even in compassion, and that's cool. Mm-hmm. However, I heard last week at the Huff meeting that you had decided to shoo people away from the lawn, or let's say ban them from the lawn.
Mr. Norris?
Yes.
You are, I'm sorry.
Let me get you in a moment. I'm in the middle of a supposed interview. I'm interviewing myself here.
Okay.
you made a decision last...
Let me give you a little history here.
Yeah.
If you look out in the signs there, that was a sign that was put out there 5 years ago. And it says, basically, no loitering, no disrespectful behavior. Keep and maintain the grounds as a holy and sacred place. And that's been the policy, really, from forever. But it was actually posted about 5 years ago. And so there's chaos creep. And the chaos creep is larger and larger crowds get on.
I thought the chaos creep was the city council, a bunch of creeps, really.
Yeah, well, they were. Maybe they are, too. But we all have chaos in our lives.
Well, so there's some behaviors in the lawn that you found disrespectful and unsacred.
And unhygienic. You know, I mean, this week we had, I don't even know how you do this, human feces steps on every step of the church, of the steps in the going into the church.
Yeah, but this wasn't...
Now, I wasn't sharp enough to ask him at this point as to whether the bathrooms were open or not. And in the past, he's told me that it depends on whether you can find the person with the key. I mean, Joel, at least by his own account, and to some extent from the accounts of other people, though he's only given actual written permission to a couple of people to sleep on the property at night, which is arguably exempt from the camping ban if it's in a fenced-off side yard or backyard, or even a front yard if it's not visible from the street. He has also allowed people who don't have permission to be there, he said in the past, provided there's no problems created, as with, let's say, drunken revelry of a disturbing kind or assaults or fights or things of that sort. So I don't know what the situation is. But again, the old poo-poo story... feces on the steps of the church. It sounds like it's almost, maybe it was a protest against, maybe that's just what I, you know, what I might think of as a protest. As I've often thought of a good way to protest merchants who suddenly tell you that you can't use their bathroom is to strip down and piss on the door of the locked bathroom. Because it's such a petty and... arrogant thing to do. It shows you sort of you're relying that people's rage and feelings will restrain themselves and that they won't cut loose like they did in Baltimore because there's this great combination of a coating of civilization, but more important, I think, even recently, is a coating of fear and the fear of repression. But when people get together and they start to challenge things together, whether violently or non-violently, that fear dissipates. Anyway, let's hear some more from this interview with Joel Miller from, I guess it was a few, 4 or 5 days ago.
Between 5 and 7
no,
on a Monday.
No, it's not isolated.
I mean, this is a large green area downtown, and it is also a place where we have some notorious burpers, but that's another story.
Yeah.
So, watch yourself there.
It is a nice green, large place. But it's also a very difficult place to maintain during the week. And the worst behavior that we've had has always been on the lawns.
Now, was there specifically any complaints from your clients or the people who use your services about behavior on the lawn?
Yes.
What were those complaints?
Well, you'll notice that the people in the shelter don't come here for dinner, even though they sleep here tonight, because they find it intimidating with the crowds that are...
Guys with tape recorders making loud announcements.
No, not you. One or two
just
people
checking.
Mention you. But mostly it's elderly, often women, find it intimidating to come here with men that are drunk, that are using foul language, that get boisterous and, you know, kind of...
Do you feel this kind of boisterous behavior, you got complaints, you mentioned they don't come here, so presumably they aren't seeing that kind of behavior.
They have to walk through the gauntlet, and then it sometimes happens here. We had a couple of people that were drunk tonight, but they were orderly, and so they...
I mean, I come, as you know, with some regularity, usually here for about... half an hour to an hour,
yeah.
And I talk to some people who are a little intoxicated,
yeah.
But rarely do I see anybody who is really boisterous, and that's been true outside too. So my experience, limited as it is different somewhat than apparently yours.
It's a different subjective, you know, kind of grids of what's boisterous and disorderly.
Well, it's true, I'm not an elderly woman, I'm an elderly man.
Yeah.
What about me? Doesn't my group count?
It does. I'm in the same group, so.
Yes. Well, we're both privileged, however.
Right.
So, you know, pointing to the signs is the same pretext you gave me 9 months ago or whenever, when you decided to ban people from 5 to 6. I think the excuse was there was some pot smoking going on. Or maybe on one occasion, some crack smoking going on. I don't know. But the point was, and you say, well, there's always a sign. Well, that's not the issue. The issue is whether you want this place to be an accommodating, welcoming place for people, or whether you want to... Because it sounded to me like when we talked earlier, you said your concern was complaints from the neighbors and maintaining a kind of a...
We don't live in a vacuum, but we certainly are concerned about what neighbors think, but that's not the...
primary thing?
That's not the primary thing, no. And you know, the primary thing is order. And you know, it's really just a few. And if we find that we can grow back to that same size, we'll do it. You know, but the only way I know to do this is invite people to be part of the community.
Well, have
community.
You shrunk in size in the last month, or have you grown?
I would imagine. No, we've shrunk.
So your last week or 2 weeks ago, let's say when their lawn was open, there was less people here than the month before?
No. That's grown. But I mean, the last 2 weeks with this policy, we've gone down from 150 to 75.
Well, of course, it's also, I mean, last week you had 75.
Yeah.
Well, so doesn't this tell you that many of the clients find this an oppressive policy?
Well, I hope they do. If they come,
I'm trying to cut the herd.
Yeah,
thin the herd.
Yeah, that was the gospel this week too. Jesus prunes the vineyard.
Somehow I just don't like that at all, Joel. It doesn't seem very Christian to me at all. It sounds more like guys in Germany.
You know Bob. He's been on the streets for a long time.
I do.
And he said it's much better.
Yeah. So if we were to poll people here, would you pay some attention to the poll as to whether this place should be, the lawn should be available or not?
Sure, I'd be interested. You can poll them.
All right, well, if I come next week and I remember...
No, the lawn is not available. It's never been available.
If I come next week, I will ask people if they feel your policy is something that makes them more comfortable or something that makes them less comfortable. Would that be a fair question?
Sure.
Will you then abide by the will of the majority?
No.
I didn't think so. We're talking with you,
Father Joel.
Anything else, Joel? Any announcements? Everything coming up?
We have a fundraiser.
Uh-oh.
At the Seymour Lab, June 13th.
That's about a month away, at least.
Right. So
by that time, we hope you have restored civil rights here at the church and outside on the lawn, and perhaps we can join you there.
Yeah, sure. And hope and civil rights, you know, maybe the operative word is civil.
Maybe they have to write a little bit. He got me tongue-tied on that one there. He always gets in the last word.
And we've been right there.
Of course, that's always the, that's often the refrain of conservatives who don't like boisterous protest or don't like it when people are expressing themselves in ways that, offend the blue noses in the area. I heard later, after this conversation, from a worker at the Homeless Lack of Service, at the Red Church, that Joel Miller is the pastor of the Calvary Episcopal Church, that he's under some pressure. I think I may have mentioned this from ecclesiastical authorities, the bishop, and also from people in the neighborhood to thin the herd, as it's put. And again, this is viewing homeless people as units of an undesirable community who have to be cut back. And whenever that paradigm begins to take shape, whenever that picture of the people is suddenly imposed upon a community, you, I think, are on dangerous ground. And that's always been a problem, of course, with how Santa Cruz and other communities treats poor people outside. They are, a couple decades ago, their behavior was bad in the sense of when they came downtown, they were abusive panhandlers, or they used foul language, or they were unsightly, or more important, they just drove away business. And then, of course, this was ramped up to say they're drug users, and they create a lot of crime. We have the police testifying that 43% of the police budget has to go to deal with these criminals, mainly because the police are choosing to go after people whose crime is sleeping, smoking, or being in a park after dark, which is we should really be going after the police who are doing this and creating huge costs. But, of course, no one wants to say that the Emperor Police Chief Kevin Vogel has no clothes in this particular situation. We're reaching the end of the hours that I do this show. I'll be coming back, I presume, on Sunday with more of the same. Maybe we'll be telling you some tales of more secondhand terror, probably, because we're going to be going to the library tomorrow to get accounts from the folks who are there, and also to keep an eye on security guards who are keeping an eye on homeless people in the library. Not only kicking them awake or jostling them awake to wake up, but ordering them out of the library if they dare to fall asleep twice, and banning them from the library, and now, of course, also banning them from the parks and banning them from other areas and banning them, of course. Now the latest is from their own vehicles parked, even for a brief period of time. They can't be there for more than 2 hours in these permit parking zones out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center street, and nowhere inside the Homeless Service Center. That was a complaint of Boulder Creek Steve when he called in. He was telling us how staff at the Homeless Lack of Services Center is allowed to park, but not clients. Clients are not permitted to be there. Is that your understanding, Doc Mike? You're noticing what vehicles are in their parking lot?
No, not. It's not my understanding. I see a lot of people who stay there have their cars parked there.
So that's wrong. Then there are some people who are allowed to park in there.
Yeah, I think you have to register your car, though. If you keep it there for any length of time, you have to register it with the office, presumably.
I better tell Boulder Creek Steve to get his facts straight. I don't want to be giving out misinformation. I am, as you know, Mr. Information. So I want to get that straight.
So some clients, I don't think there are that many parking spaces there. Like there's only a dozen.
Not too many. The staff have to double park. They have two rows of parking, one inside the other. So if you want to move your inside car, you have to find the person that's outside you. That's the way a lot of the staff is parked.
I see.
So there is a limitation, yes.
And how are the staff these days? How are they treating people?
I would say they're good. You know, I don't have any. I haven't seen any bullies too much. I've seen them in the past, but not so much now. So I think it's okay.
Well, I heard there was a successful suit for racial discrimination, not against a client, but against an African American staff member who claimed to be put into a hostile work environment. I'm not sure. I think he was talking primarily about nigger comments by clients who were, you know, using abusive and hostile comments of that sort. And actually, I was asked to research this issue myself by Attorney Gettleman in this case. And what I said was, I said, you know, I would certainly ask around as to whether anybody has gone after, you know, has been noticing this kind of abuse of African-American staff members or a particular person who won the money. I think he won a significant settlement, I was told, hundreds of thousands of dollars, or somewhere around between $50,000 and $150,000. But what I told him was, people in positions of authority who are trying to direct people into very crowded situations and order them around and aren't very well trained and then start acting in authoritarian ways are likely to be treated by people with some disrespect and anger. And, you know, if one is... I don't want to make generalizations about people who are outside, but... say, you fucking asshole, which is something that can be said, I think, more easily by people who have been outside for a while and gotten more free from the constraints or been abused a lot more outside by authorities. And